Dick Boyle's target was the Independent Tank Brigade, which was the organizational fist of the 65th Type B Group Army. And to service that target, he had 28 AH-64D Apache attack helicopters, supported by 12 Kiowa Warriors and one other Black Hawk. The Chinese tank force was 20 miles northwest of their initial crossing point, agreeably sitting in open ground in circular formation so as to have guns pointing in all directions. It had probably made sense to logger them that way 40 years ago. With his OH-58Ds playing scout, the attack formation swept in from the north down the valley. There were more air missions tonight, and not all of them were over Russian territory. 20 F-117A stealth fighters had deployed to Zhigansk, and they'd sat on the ground waiting for bombs. The special weapons for the Black Jets were the GBU-27 laser-guided hard-target penetrators. These were designed not merely to hit objects and explode, but to lance inside them before detonating, and they had special targets located in or near the cities of Harbin and Bay'an, and every one was a railroad bridge abutment. The People's Republic depended more on its rail transportation than most countries. At every potential choke point, like river crossings, they'd used the ample labor force of their country to build multiple bridges, all of heavily built rebarred concrete abutments. Surely, they'd thought, six separate crossing points at a single river couldn't all be damaged beyond timely repair. The attacks were made almost simultaneously, just a minute apart from east to west at the six parallel bridges over the Songhua-Tiang River at Harbin. The same performance was repeated in Bay'an, where five more bridges were dropped into the Uyohe River. And in this dual stroke, the supply line to the Chinese invasion force was sundered for all time. Task Force 77 had been holding station east of the Formosa Strait until receiving orders to race west. The various air bosses had word that one of their submarines had eliminated a Chinese bomber and fast attack submarine. Now it was their job to go after the People's Liberation Army Navy. The task force had three SSNs assigned to sanitize the area of Chi Com submarines. Every PLAN base over a swath of 500 miles of coast took one form of fire or another, and the ship count was jacked up to 16, all in a period of a little over an hour. It was a difficult night for Marshal Luo Gong. He'd gone to bed concerned with the operations of his military forces, but pleased that they seemed to be going well. And then, just after he'd closed his eyes, the phone rang. His official car came to convey him to the Defense Ministry's communications center, where he found a number of officers going over fragmentary information and trying to make sense of it. Minister Luo's presence didn't help them, but just added stress to the existing chaos. Nothing seemed clear. "Comrade Marshal," said a new voice. It was Major General Wei Daoming, one of Luo's senior aides. "You should let me and my staff assemble this information in such a way that we can present to you in an orderly manner. Why don't you get a few hours of sleep while we maintain the watch?" "Good idea, Wei." Luo took two steps to the couch and lay down across it. "They're moving," Major Tucker reported with a stretch and a yawn. "Their reconnaissance element just started rolling. Your people have pulled way back. How come?"
"I ordered them to collect Comrade Gogol before the Chinese kill him," Colonel Tukunov told the American.
"Captain, look," the driver called. Alexandrov lifted his head out the big top hatch. A senior officer was waving to him. 3 minutes later, they halted alongside him.
"You are Alexandrov?"
"Yes, Comrade General."
"I am General Sinyavsky. You've done well, boy. Who is this? Are you the famous Pasha?"
"Senior Sergeant Gogol of the Iron and Steel Division,"
the old man said, with a salute which Sinyavsky returned crisply.
"Combat is a young man's game, Pavel Petrovich. Let me get you to a place of safety."
Gogol shook his head.
"The captain promised me one shot, or I would not have left my home."
"Is that a fact?" The commanding general of the 265th Motor Rifle looked around. Captain Alexandrov? Very well, we'll give our old comrade his one shot.
He pointed to a place on the map before him.
This should be a good spot for you. You've done a fine job shadowing them all the way up. Your reward will be to see how we greet the bastards.
Behind the reconnaissance element is a large force.
I know. I've been watching them on TV for a day and a half, but our American friends have cut off their supplies. And we will stop them right here. Your first job is to make their screen vehicles disappear.
Yes, Comrade General. That we can do.
There, Yefremov said to Oleg Provalov.
They took the bait. It was just after midnight in Moscow, and the embassy of the People's Republic of China had most of its lights off, but not all. Three windows had their lights on, and their shades fully open, and they were all in a row. He'd stood over Suvorov's shoulder as he typed the message.
I have the pieces in place now. If you wish for me to carry out the operation, leave three windows in a row with the lights on and the windows fully open.
Yefremov had a television camera record the event. Now they had proof positive that the Chinese government was conspiring to kill President Grushevoy. That would play well in the international press.